Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Now, I just got back from spending a week in Maine, picking blueberries, eating lobster, swimming, hiking, all that kind of stuff. And I was staying at a hotel where I had worked as the sous chef back in the mid-90s. It's called Quisisana, Q-U-I-S-I-S-A-N-A, Quisisana. And Quissy, as we call it, is a very old-fashioned sort of place, which is what I love so much about it. The cabins and the rooms have no locks on the doors, and there are no phones in the rooms and no TVs. Sounds like Gilligan's Island. And there's no cell phone service either, unless you drive 5 miles up the road or you hike up the closest mountain, which is just up the road, which is what I did every day in order to take a hike, but also in order to check my messages, which is kind of what mountains are for, aren't they? And there's Wi-Fi there. There's Wi-Fi in the main lodge building. So you could do, you know, super important vacation in the woods, things like check your email and check your Twitter feed and stuff like that. But in order to get voicemail and text, you had to go up the mountain. So there's like that small nod to modernity there. But other than that, almost nothing has changed. Quissy, like from decade to decade, not much changes. And that's kind of how I like it. It's stuck in the past. It's stuck in the past where Michael Jackson still looks black and I still have to remember phone numbers. And that's kind of where I want to be. And even the food is still kind of stuck in the past, although they're working on it and things change slowly. I've consulted for them over the years on the menu, but change is definitely slow to come there. You know, not really enough vegetables, too much meat, nothing really local. But, you know, hey, it's not Brooklyn. It's rural Maine at a hotel that's open for just 10 weeks each season, each summer. So if I have to eat industrial beef and industrial eggs and 6 green beans with dinner, it's okay because I love the place and I love being there. And, you know, after all, an industrial steak full of antibiotics and eggs that ate soy and chicken feathers instead of bugs and worms and green beans shipped in from Mexico covered in pesticides are still better than vegan soy nuggets and egg beaters and veggie puffs and all that kind of foodiness stuff, right? And while I was up there escaping, albeit with the occasional furtive mountaintop tweet, the world continued all around me. All kinds of fun, fascinating, and frightening foodiness that just keeps on rolling on. The great foodiness machine never really stops. It never goes to Maine to pick blueberries or float on the lake in a kayak or climb a mountain in the rain. The great foodiness machine may make blueberry-flavored instant powdered sports drink mix to take up that mountain with you, or NutraSweetened apple pie-flavored yogurt at the breakfast buffet included at the hotel I stayed in Vermont for one night before I went to Maine. Or foodiness may need a break from driving when it's on vacation, and so it may stop off in one of the many New Hampshire state-run liquor stores that dot the highway throughout the entire state. The ones that practically make drinking and driving a state-sanctioned leisure activity. And where I saw, and get ready for this one, not just chocolate chip cookie-flavored vodka, which is already a repugnant idea to me, as you well know. No, not just that, but worse. The label on this bottle of vodka in the New Hampshire state-run liquor store on the highway. The label on this bottle in the display with all the other flavored vodka bottles. The label on this one said imitation chocolate chip cookie dough flavored. Did you get that? So we start off with your basic chocolate chip cookie, an innocent, simple baked item. And then we derive its chemical flavor profile in a lab somewhere in New Jersey, because that's where all flavors are made, by the way. And then we add that flavor to vodka. Okay, so then the vodka company says, well, how about cookie dough flavored instead? I mean, all 30-something alcoholics love cookie dough flavored stuff, so let's do that one. So they all huddle around the lab bench till they get the cookie dough flavoring right, with the help of morbidly obese focus groupers to compare actual cookie dough with cookie dough flavoring. And then that dumb old government of ours steps in and says, make sure you guys put that it's artificially flavored on the label, because we don't want to deceive any of those 30-something drunks into thinking that there's real cookie dough in their vodka. I mean, what is this, Brooklyn? If you want real cookie dough flavor in your vodka, you're going to have to DIY in suspenders and a waxed handlebar mustache and a distillery run by solar-powered bicycles. How your guests are going to respond when you take a chunk of homemade cookie dough and put it into their cocktail is a whole other matter. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. So the foodiness fun just kept on rolling while I was away in the woods. And so, as I occasionally do, I like to bring you the latest and the greatest newsworthy items and events of the past few months. Yes, it's another Trending Now show here on Let's Get Real. Now, you're probably thinking, of course, that I'm going to start off with something about Paula Deen, biggest news story of the year, and her empire that's melting faster than the butter in my apartment this week. But no, that story's old news already. We all know it, along with the story about Nigella Lawson being publicly strangled by her husband, who's now filing for divorce from her. Now, I would strangle her, too, if she kept sticking her fingers in my food all the time like she does on her show. And I believe that in the British law system, that is a divorceable offense. The fingers in the food, not the strangling. Strangling's fine. But speaking of Paula Deen and racist Southerners, Chris, my co-producer, texted me while I was in Maine. And I, of course, had to climb the mountain to get the text and reply to it because I thought it was something important. Turns out it was a question about watermelon and how to tell if a given melon is ripe. Now, Chris and I have worked together for over 3 years now, creating and producing this show, and we've had many, many conversations about fruit and fruits. And I'm sure somewhere we've discussed watermelon ripeness. But he wasn't paying attention because he was too busy, probably screaming at tourists on the High Line to just go home, which is what he does. So I texted back from the mountaintop, that watermelons are already ripe when they're picked. Which they are. You just look for the one with a larger yellow flat spot on one side because that means it laid out in the sun longest. That's how you pick your best watermelon. Large yellow flat spot on one side. So I texted back, your watermelon's already ripe when you get it. And then I added, or get one of your great granddaddy's slaves to go get a ripe one from the field for you. Because Chris is from Mississippi or Alabama or someplace scary like that. And he is the reincarnation of Scarlett O'Hara. So he texted back that he was going to leak that text to the media to create a firestorm of PR around Let's Get Real, which he could then spin into a large media deal for us. And since I have no empire to crumble, so to speak of, we can use it the opposite way to build one from scratch. It's all so meta 21st century. Now, before anyone gets all worked up about this, just remember that I am the Jewish, nearsighted, underheighted child of an immigrant refugee from war-torn Europe, and I was raised in a broken home, and my first language wasn't English. It was sarcasm. So I am a victim of oppression, too. Chris likes to call this game the biggest victim. The point is that Chris says he paid $15 for his watermelon at Forager's Market and then had to walk home through the throngs of hick tourists on 8th Avenue here to see the High Line, which he says makes him the biggest victim. But I disagree. And speaking of watermelons, our first Trending Now story, the beloved icon of traditional American foodways, that emblem of American industrial ingenuity and baking, the cookie that brought the Nabisco factory to Manhattan, that later became the tourist choke Chelsea Market and spawned the High Line, the Oreo, has introduced a brand new Oreo flavor. Wait, what? How can there be a new Oreo flavor? Oreo is a flavor. That's like saying there's a new flavor of red velvet or a new flavor of blue. How can there be a new flavor of Oreo? Well, guess what? There is! And it is watermelon. How delightfully delicious. Now you can enjoy the juicy goodness of real fruit in the conveniently crumbly delivery system of an Oreo, and no dripping juice down your arms or seeds to spit out or even... What? No, seeds to spit out, even though almost all watermelons are seedless now. Or cutting of anything. Nothing but a few crumbs to brush off of your grotesquely large gut. So I saw this item a few weeks ago on a food blog or something I was reading online. And at first I thought that maybe they were a Japanese product because the Japanese really like melon-flavored stuff. Wait a second. Is that racist for me to say? If so, please get onto the Japanese Anti-Defamation League because I could use the press, okay? Anyway, this seemed too weird and incongruous to the American Oreo flavor profile. It didn't seem like something that would be invented for the American market, but no, it's a real good old American product with two vanilla Oreo stamped wafers surrounding a two-color blob of filling, one hot pink and one bright lime green. Now, I'm assuming that the two colors just taste exactly the same because why would they make the green filling taste like watermelon rind? Nobody would enjoy that except me. Although if they made a pickled watermelon rind flavored Oreo filling, we might actually be onto something. So yet again, and I'm sure you're all getting very tired of me talking about this, but I don't care. Do we need to make flavors and variations of everything, even the Oreo? I mean, I don't eat them, but I did. And I enjoy their status as a historical American traditional food. It was bad enough when my cheap-ass mother would buy Hydrox instead of Oreos, or even worse, the generic sandwich cream cookie. And remember the white ones? The vanilla Oreos. They were useless. I mean, who'd want those when you could have the deep black wafer and the gritty white cream? It was ebony and ivory years before the song. Until then, if I want watermelon, I'll get Chris's great-granddaddy to fetch me a good one from the plantation. And until then, I'll just get my cookies in the form of vodka. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, more Trending Now.
You're listening to 4 of 7 by HRN's own Jack Inslee on the heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. And since we're on the subject of artificial fruit-flavored foodiness, do you remember Tang? The drink that went into space on the Mercury flight and subsequent Gemini missions? It turns out that those astronauts on those missions, they weren't really enjoying that Tang all that much. I'm stunned. I know. Okay. So if you're under probably 35, you're probably not even getting this reference. So let me explain for you. Tang was a powdered citrus-flavored drink mix, first foisted on the American public in 1959. Now, Tang may well have been the first foodiness product. I say that about a lot of things, but I think Tang might be it. And it was touted as a better alternative to actual citrus fruit juice. It was a powder. It was easy. It was convenient. Which raises a cumulative, let's get real, philosophical question, which is, why do Americans always believe that powders are better than food? Discuss that amongst yourselves. Now, of course, the guy who invented Tang also gave the world Pop Rocks, Cool Whip, and instant setting Jell-O, because waiting for your Jell-O to set for an hour in the fridge was just too long in those pre-cable, pre-internet days. I mean, what were you supposed to do while you waited for your Jell-O to set? Go outside and play? What a legacy to have invented the three finest manufactured non-food edible products in history. And let's just say I seriously doubt that his staff of on-call chefs and valets brought him Tang for breakfast in bed and made him Jell-O with Cool Whip for dessert. He had the money to eat all the real food money can buy, which is, by the way, for my Tea Party listeners, what the foodiness elite do with their money. They eat real food. I'm just saying. Anyway, the astronauts in those missions were supposed to act like they were just loving on that Tang. And maybe it was because they were trapped in space with a bunch of guys and missing the real Tang so much. I'm just saying. We were all supposed to believe that an instant powdered, artificially colored dust mixed with water was better than real food because it was modern, space age, and futuristic. So a few weeks ago, 83-year-old Buzz Aldrin, who was an astronaut who went up, I think, on the second Mercury mission. I don't remember. If you don't know who he is, just Google him. Buzz Aldrin tweeted, yes, tweeted, he's 83 years old, and he's tweeting, my 75-year-old mom can't even send an email. But anyway, Buzz Aldrin tweeted something like, Tang sucks, referring to a comment that he made at an awards show. Now, Buzz Aldrin is a big-time Republican and GOP fundraiser, and he also was the only astronaut to ever hold a religious service on the moon, where he gave himself communion, although I'm not sure how he did that through the big helmet. Maybe back on board. Anyway, Chris also wants to point out that Buzz Aldrin has also had lots of face work done and is, generally speaking, a media whore, kind of like I aspire to be. So for a guy who is as corporate white guy big business establishment as that to say that Tang sucks, whoo boy, the times they are a-changin'. I'm surprised he didn't have to tweet a retraction, except that now Tang isn't owned by General Foods anymore. It's owned by Mondelez, a company that makes products for the Latino market. If the Republicans really want to reach out to the Hispanics, to the Hispanic vote of America, like they say they do, maybe they should make sure that Buzz keeps it zipped up about Tang, because that's who's buying it now. If I were a newly registered Latina voter in the U.S. and I had to choose parties, I'd definitely not pick the one who insulted my favorite powdered drink mix. I'd probably pick the one who didn't try to have me deported. Yet again, just saying. Oh, hold on. This just came in. Chris just handed me an update. Buzz did retract his statement about Tang. TMZ confronted him at an airport about it, and he was quite agitated and blamed the media for the press. They did not, however, ask him how he got cat eyes. And our next trending now story comes to us not from space, but from the future, or more specifically, the future as depicted in the 1969 movie Soylent Green. Now, as my devoted listeners, you know I love referring back to Soylent Green. This whole show was originally based on Soylent Green, and how prescient it was in predicting overpopulation, crop failure, and ultimately, foodiness. In a dystopian future set, coincidentally, in West Chelsea, under the elevated rail line that became the futuristic nightmare that is the High Line, residents of future New York are scooped up and secretly turned into food pellets called Soylent Green, which is produced and sold by Soylent Green Corporation. People are told that it's made from algae and seaweed, but nobody knows that they are actually eating people until Charlton Heston figures it out and spills the human beans at the end of the film when he iconically screams, Soylent Green is people! It's people! If you've never seen it, you can also watch The Simpsons parody of it, where Lisa realizes that little Lisa's slurry is made from puppies. It's puppies! So now, some young guy who lives in Brooklyn, by the way, that's why I have to move, has created a drink that purports to supply all the nutrition you'll ever need, no real food required, in a drink form, and he's calling it Soylent. Unironically, it seems, since most under 30s have never even heard of the movie, let alone have seen it. It's not a name for a product that you are proposing as an end to global hunger, unless you are totally sure that, one, every starving person in the world has seen the movie and has a sick sense of irony and humor, or two, you think that nobody all has seen it or remembers it. According to the reports that I read, it's very similar to Ensure, which is a foodiness nightmare food replacer drink made mostly of sugar and whey protein powder and chemicals and synthetic vitamins, which is apparently being used right now as a means of keeping the hunger-striking detainees at Guantanamo alive against their will. If I were hunger-striking, which, by the way, would never, ever happen, and they tried to feed me that crap, I'd rather starve or eat ground-up old residents of Chelsea and then take over their rent-controlled apartments in the 70s and then sell them in the 2000s. But the point is that this Brooklyn 20-something is doing the only unironic thing in Brooklyn as we speak, and yet is the only actually ironic thing. This is what Chris and I are officially coining the irony rabbit hole, where the ironic is unironic and the unironic is ironic, and some kid steals the formula for Ensure and makes hundreds of thousands of dollars and get tons of press by saying that his powder is better than food. Maybe I should have this guy on as a guest. Maybe we can ride on his press. Chris would also like to point out that down the irony rabbit hole is a new Highline adjacent luxury tower called Chelsea West Towers, which is the name of the luxury building in Soylent Green where the Soylent Corporation CEO lived. So either someone in the developer's marketing department of Chelsea West Towers has a wicked sense of humor and love for dystopian sci-fi from the 60s, or we are truly down the irony rabbit hole where the ironic is not and what isn't ironic is, which might just be considered straight up camp. Discuss amongst yourselves. And finally, on this week's Trending Now, we get to my favorite segment of the Trending Now show, which is the part where I say, I told you so. But before we do that, we are going to take another very short break, and then we'll be right back with the I told you so segment. We'll be right back.
More from Jack Inslee and Jade Jones on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. Now remember that if you are a fan of Let's Get Real, you should follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. That's Let's Get Real Show. You can also find Let's Get Real on Facebook. You can also check out my website, which is letsgetrealshow.com. You should also visit the HeritageRadioNetwork.org website to listen to all of my other friends and colleagues' shows that are there. There are so many. And they're all always available on iTunes also. So you really have no reason, no excuse not to fill your life with the Heritage Radio Network. There's more than you could ever imagine out there. Okay, so finally, on this week's Trending Now show, we get to my favorite segment, which is the I Told You So segment. Now, in my short half century or so on this planet, I've been right about a lot of stuff, and I've been wrong about some stuff, too, and I'm okay with that, but mostly I'm right, and that's why I have a radio show and you don't. Now, anybody with a fraction of a brain cell can tell you that you're probably a lot better off eating food that's recognizable as food, as in if it walked, swam, grew, or flew. It's food. If it came out of a lab or a factory, it's not food. You know that. That's old news. Now, when artificial sweeteners came along in the post-World War II chemical boom of the 50s, they allowed the foodiness industry to create a whole new category of foodiness products that were sweetened with chemicals, not sugar. Now, I think that sugar is going to turn out to be our next tobacco, in that it's our next biggest killer, and ultimately we will go after it the way we went after tobacco, I think, I hope. But, I mean, I'm okay with eating some sugar. It's not sugar I'm opposed to. It's the hundreds of pounds of it that everyone ingests every year. I mean, small amounts of sugar are okay, and we're meant to eat them in the way that humans were always designed to eat it, in things like really ripe fruit or in a little bit of honey or, you know, the occasional watermelon-flavored Oreo. You know, treats like that. Now, artificial sweeteners made sweetness an all-the-time thing and created a nonstop craving for sweetness in people by tricking their brains into thinking that they're eating sugar but not providing the physical satisfaction of it, sort of like sweetener porn. So sometime in the 90s, along came Splenda, a.k.a. sucrose polyester. Splenda, with its made-up name and its yellow packets, was going to replace not just the vilified and now supposedly okay saccharin, and also NutraSweet, a.k.a. aspartame, which couldn't be used in baking because it was unstable in heat and was giving people MS-like symptoms. Now, not coincidentally, the only person I've ever known to be diagnosed with MS is also a Diet Dr. Pepper addict. Just saying. Now, sucrose polyester will be my drag name if I ever need one. But if it was listed as an ingredient on a diet dingleberry-flavored soda can or a watermelon Oreo-flavored yogurt nugget single-serving pouch as sucrose polyester, do you think you'd eat it? All that term makes me think of is the horrible, stretchy, maroon polyester pants made by Danskin that I had to wear as a kid that I got in a bag of hand-me-downs because I was too chubby to wear regular jeans. I know, it's painful. Sucrose polyester to me is those Danskin pants melted down and added to a diet foodiness cereal bar that has artificial pomegranate-flavored bits layered between synthetic milk stripes and soy crunchies, all under 100 calories. Well, it turns out that after all the rigorous testing and years of tracking that the FDA did not before they marketed Splenda, an Italian lab has just released a preliminary study that shows that lab animals, when fed my old melted down Danskin sucrose polyester pants, turn out to get cancer. Yeah, cancer. Can you believe it? Now, me taking credit for predicting that Splenda is unsafe is like Al Gore predicting the internet or proving that the moon landings never happen. Which, of course, means the Apollo astronauts didn't drink Tang either. It's just too easy. It's like shooting fish in a barrel or tourists on the High Line. So even though it's a cheap and easy shot, I'm going to say it. I told you so. Splenda! Not so much. And in a final note on this week's Trending Now show, Pepsi. That's it. Just Pepsi. Good night. Ever think about what makes colas brown? It's a little cheapo additive they put in it called caramel coloring. Sounds harmless, right? Like, when I think of caramel coloring, I think that, like, someone is just back there at the Pepsi factory cooking up some sugar to the dark amber stage of caramelization, you know, like Keebler elves or Oompa Loompas, and then somehow they extract the color from that caramel and they add it to the Pepsi to make it toasty brown and delicious. Well, that's not exactly how it's done. Oompa Loompas require too much health insurance these days, so they've been eliminated. Caramel color is a chemical additive that has been banned in Europe because it's, guess what? Carcinogenic. So Pepsi has announced that it's finally removing it from their products. I have a better idea. How about we just remove the Pepsi from the Pepsi? Of course, then they'll turn it into a product called Pepsi Free. Oh, that already exists. I really shouldn't be giving these ideas away for free. Anyway, if we took the Pepsi out of Pepsi, we could also just call it water. Or how about this radical suggestion? Maybe we just stop drinking it. Stop drinking Pepsi and Coke and Dr. Pepper and all those brown, sweet, and carbonated cans of non-food that we Americans swill down by the millions of gallons of sugary and chemically sweetened uselessness every day. Just a thought. I mean, I'm sure Pepsi's going to find a great way to spin this one to make themselves seem like the heroes in all of this, like they're interested in our wellness. Not because there was so much pressure by groups saying, this chemical is banned in Europe, why are you still using it? You need to take it out. No, Pepsi's going to say, look at us, look what we did. They're interested in our wellness, because that's the new term, wellness. Now, I maintain my wellness by drinking caramel coloring-free Pepsi every day, right after my cereal bar and before my evening can of Soylent. And my new favorite cocktail is imitation cookie dough flavored vodka straight up in a martini glass with a tang dipped rim. I know, I shouldn't be giving these ideas away for free. So in the meantime, if you don't want to eat shit in powder form or drink the all-new Pepsi-free Pepsi, and you do want to not have MS or cancer, and you want me to get as much press as Paula Deen, then keep tuning into Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. That's it for tonight. Thanks to Joe in the control room. Thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer. Thanks to Ben Kaplan for writing my amazing theme song. Thanks to Adam Rosenberg for his web savvy. Thanks to me for coming here and doing this. Okay, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.